Welcome to Preschool and Beyond, a podcast where we tackle some of the most common and the most challenging issues facing preschool-age children and their families. Recording from Discovery Child Development Center is your host, Mike DeLotte.
Hi, and welcome to episode 21 of Preschool and Beyond, Estate Planning for Young Families. Writing a will is one of those things that most parents know that they should do, yet a recent study found that more than half of families with children do not have a will, and that number rises to 92% for adults 35 and under. Some of the common reasons parents fail to set up a will in an estate plan include the belief that they are too young to worry about one, or that it's too complicated and expensive to set one up. Today we have with us attorney Orly Resnick of Resnick Law to discuss some of the reasons why it's essential for parents to prepare their families for the unexpected and how they can make sure their children are well taken care of in case of unforeseen events. We'll talk about some of the factors parents should consider when creating their estate plan, as well as some tips for getting the process started. Thanks for joining us today, Orly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So let's start off. What exactly is an estate plan, and why is it so important for families with young children to consider setting one up?
An estate plan is basically a document or a series of documents that outline a person's wishes and desires for all of their assets and all of the people that are under their control. So that includes minor age children and any incapacitated persons that they might be taking care of. So it involves also taking an inventory of all of your assets that would pass outside of the will through beneficiary designations and strategizing the best designations for those assets so that they pass according to a person's wishes and in a manner that is consistent with any estate planning documents that they're creating. I believe it's important for every person to have a will, but it's especially true for parents with minor children. Through the estate planning process, a parent can identify a guardian for their minor children, as well as create a trust for the assets that the minor would inherit, and the parent can choose a trustee to manage those assets.
So just for terminology for people, is there a difference between an estate plan and a will, and what is that difference?
So a will can be a tool included in the estate plan, but there can also be different mechanisms for distributing property included in a person's estate plan. So that might include a trust as well. It can be a separate trust, or it can be a trust that is included inside of a will, and the trust would only become effective should the will become probated, meaning a person passes away and the will is given to a court to start administering those assets.
So a will should be a part of the plan, but may not necessarily be sufficient. Could that be?
Correct. It depends on every person's unique circumstance. Typically for minors, for parents with minor age children, I include a testamentary trust inside the will. So the will would be the primary document. There's a trust contained inside that will that specifies how the assets are to be managed and controlled for the minor and who is to manage and control those assets.
So if you don't have something in place, if a family doesn't have a will, can you kind of walk us through what would happen in that scenario?
So if a couple with minor children should pass away and they don't have a will, first let's talk about what happens to their assets. Their assets would be distributed according to the North Carolina default statutory rules. And that's going to be dependent on who is surviving them. So if we have a couple with two minor children, then in North Carolina, those assets would just be divided between both of those children. But here's where it gets tricky, because those assets can't be given directly to the children. So through a guardianship proceeding, a court would appoint a guardian over the person. That would be the person that has custody and control over the minor children. But they might also appoint a separate guardian of the estate. This doesn't necessarily have to be the same person that's the guardian over the children. So the guardian over the estate would be responsible for managing those assets that were left to the minor children. There's a very strict statutory regimen that the guardian of the estate has to follow as to how and when those assets can be utilized for the minor. And this can be very rigorous. And it's something that if a parent creates a trust in their will, they can draft around those rigorous requirements. The other thing that would happen if the assets are managed by a guardian of the estate is that at the age of 18, the children would automatically inherit those assets. This is something that when I tell parents it's often a motivating factor to get them to start thinking about creating an estate plan, because most people don't want their children at the age of 18 to inherit the amount of money that they might be talking about.
Right. And then you are also subject to whoever the court thinks is the most appropriate. Like, you, it could be your sister that they decide to give it to, but you may not really think your sister is an appropriate person to raise your children. Is that
correct? So there would be a guardianship proceeding where a court would appoint a guardian for the minor. And this is the standard that they use, is what is in the best interest of the minor. If the parents haven't left any direction for the court, then the court is just going to look at whatever family members or friends come forward and whatever proof those individuals can provide to show that they are the person that is best suited to perform the duties in the best interest of those children.
Right. So I think most people would feel most comfortable if they were the ones making those decisions. So having an estate plan that specifically names who they would like to take care of their children and if something were to occur. So when you work with families who are selecting guardians, what are some of the factors that they should consider?
Mm-hmm. So this could be a very difficult decision. Yes. For parents to choose a guardian, because sometimes people have a lot of choices and they can't narrow it down, and other times they don't have any choices and they really have to dig deep and look at friends or extended relatives. So some of the things that I tell parents to consider is they really need to think about the ability and the willingness of the guardian to serve. You have to consider the age of the guardian, their health condition. Can the guardian meet the physical demands of raising a child? Are they retired? Can they meet the economic demands of raising a child? And also have to consider the age and health of the children. Parenting and being a guardian, it's a long road, and you're planning for the unknown here. So you really don't know what age those children might be when they need to go under the care of a guardian. Also want to think about the values, principles, and child-rearing philosophy and the religious affiliation of the proposed guardian, the location of the proposed guardian, the proximity to other relatives, as well as the lifestyle of the proposed guardian, such as their job stability. Do they travel a lot for work? Do they have other children?
So when people are making their plans, do you recommend multiple people? Do you kind of rank? My first choice would be my brother, then my parents, or how does it usually work?
Absolutely. So I usually ask people to select three or four guardians. You always want to have a backup for your backup. And you can select the order in which you would like those people to be selected. So you say, you know, first I would like my parents to serve as a guardian, but if they're unable or they're unwilling, then I would like my brother to serve as the guardian, and just go on down the list, so on and so forth. It's always important to make sure that the parents ask the guardian. Yeah. If they would like to serve. I've seen this happen a lot. Couples come in and they meet with me and they get all their documents together and we're about to sign the documents, and I ask them, okay, well, did you ask the guardian if they'd be willing to serve? And sometimes they say, no, I'm sure that they would. And yeah. I've seen it happen where families don't discuss this, and if it ever comes down to it, sometimes the grandparents don't want that responsibility. Right. So it's really an important discussion to have and make sure everybody's on the same page before you finalize your documents.
And I don't want to go too deep into details, but there are, I know, so many things to consider. Like, for example, let's say you chose your brother and sister-in-law, but you're a lot more comfortable with your brother raising your children. And if something were to happen to him, you wouldn't necessarily want your sister-in-law, and if she remarried someone. So can you get that technical in your will, you know, put, you know, under these conditions, they would not receive guardianship or?
Absolutely. So I always recommend that people choose individual guardians, not couples as guardians, that they have to be comfortable if that individual had to serve on their own. That way we can specify, right. For example, in the instance that you mentioned, if there were to be a divorce, would you still want those two individuals to be the guardians of the children? Yeah. A lot of times people say no. So I encourage people, even if they're naming their own parents, to identify and to be comfortable with the individual that would serve.
So after you, if you have your will in place and something unforeseen does happen, does the person you select, number one, as guardian, if they agree to be the guardian, automatically receive your children, or could the court then pick someone else?
So in North Carolina, any guardianship designation, even if the choice is made in a will, it's required to go through a guardianship proceeding. So the judge has to be the final determiner. In most instances, the judge will defer to the parents' wishes in the will. There are some cases where parents are concerned that their wishes are not going to be followed. There might be some contentious family relationships. They think if it's a blended family or there's been a divorce, they don't want their ex-husband's parents trying to get custody of the children. If that is a concern, then we would do what's called a memorandum of custody. It's just a separate document. It's referenced in the will. It's kept with the will, but it's separate from it, where the individual or the couple can just outline their concerns for who specifically they would not want to have custody for their children and why.
Yeah, that's a great point to make. So if you really want to exclude your mother-in-law, your brother, your sister, you can spell that out in your will. Great. So when someone assumes the role of guardian, you know, they are become responsible for making sure the child is taken care of, their well-being. Are they all also financially responsible? How does that work?
Yes. So the guardian steps into the role as the legal custodian, the same role that the parent had. So they are responsible for the education, the welfare, the well-being of that child. And this is where creating a will and having a testamentary minors trust inside the will is so important, because then the parents can provide financial stability for that child and lessen the burden on the guardian. There are some instances where a parent will create a guardianship letter, but they don't necessarily create a will. So what happens in that instance is that the parent has selected their guardian over the person, but the assets of the child are designated under the control of the guardian of an estate by the court. And these two people might not have the same goals that the parents had for their children. And the trust is also a really great tool for parents to incentivize behavior. Again, you know, couples are planning for the unknown here. Everybody has their own hopes, dreams, and goals for their children. A trust can be a mechanism where you can create measurable standards and incentivize behavior and encourage your children to pursue the goals and dreams that you would have wanted for them through financial incentives of a trust.
Right. So in that trust, you can then decide, like, they'll get a certain percentage when they're 18, 21. Can you spread it out across years and be really specific on how they receive that money?
Exactly. So the trust, it's a individualized, tailored tool. It's not a one-size-fits-all. And this is where, you know, getting the help of an attorney can really be important in terms of identifying your goals and finding the best means to achieve those goals. You can specify really any type of distribution scheme that best meets your needs of helping the child achieve the goals and dreams that you want. You can specify they're not going to get the money until they're 30. You can specify specific increments that distributions will be made. You can specify additional distributions being made when certain educational goals are met. There's really endless possibilities.
Great. So you can earmark money, sort of say, for education so that you can make sure that money isn't going to a new sports car when they turn 18.
Exactly. Right. And that would not happen if you didn't have a will, because the minor would inherit all the money as soon as they turn 18.
Right. And I don't know about you, but at 18, I don't think I was quite prepared to handle financial responsibility like that.
No, most children are not.
So there are many different ways families can set up a will and an estate plan. So what factors should families think about when they're debating between using one of the online forms and companies or seeking out an attorney to help them set them up?
So there are some really wonderful online tools available now, and they can be great for some families, might not be the right fit for others, and it's really difficult to tell. Because the online tools don't give you really many differentiating factors to let you know whether this is the best plan for you or if there's another option. It tries to be like a one size fits all. So there's just a few points of caution that I like to tell people about when they're considering whether they want to seek the help of an attorney or if they want to try one of the, you know, do-it-yourself online options. The first is that online forms, they allow for some room for user editing, and some of those edits can inadvertently invalidate a will. And unfortunately, the online software may not be able to detect or correct these errors. And these are errors that once they're made, they cannot be fixed. You're not aware of them.
Yeah.
By the time you become aware of them, it's too late. The second is that online software might be able to help you draft a will, but it can't help you execute it. So in North Carolina, a will is only valid and able to be accepted by a court if it's properly executed. In order to be properly executed, it must be signed in the presence of two witnesses. And it's also the best practice to execute the will with a notary present. So again, you can create a will that expresses all your goals and wishes, but if it's not executed properly, then it might not be accepted by the court, and then all of your planning was for naught. Another point of caution is that online retailers, they don't provide counseling regarding assets that pass outside of the will. People often think that their estate planning is done once they draft their will. However, bank accounts, retirement accounts, life insurance policies, they provide an option for naming primary and secondary beneficiaries. And if those beneficiaries aren't designated in accordance with the plan and the will, then the planning might all be thwarted.
So there's so many different factors you need to really consider. And that's why perhaps an online one could work for some families. But, you know, for many of us, especially with children, there are just so many things to consider that it often would be insufficient. So let's say you do decide you want an attorney to help you set up an estate plan. Can you kind of tell us what that process might look like and how long it takes and what's involved?
Sure. So the process probably varies slightly based on the practitioner. The total time frame for drafting the documents might take anywhere from, you know, 2 weeks to 3 months, just depending on how busy that office is. The first step typically is just pick up the phone, call an attorney, call their office, ask friends for a referral. Most attorneys that do estate planning should be willing to speak with you on the phone for, you know, 5 to 15 minutes and give you an overview of their practice and the services that they provide. After that call, they might send you a fee agreement or some sort of statement that indicates the price range of the services, as well as a estate planning questionnaire. And the estate planning questionnaire is going to be the main document that's used to help identify what the client's goals are and what the best planning tools for that client would be. So after you complete the estate planning questionnaire, you would either return to the attorney's office with that questionnaire, have an in-person consultation. Typically takes anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and a half, just depending on the nature of the estate and the amount and type of assets involved. And then you would discuss with the attorney your plans, figure out the best tools, if it's a will, if it's a trust, if there are any other sort of documents. And then after that, the attorney would just start drafting the documents. They would send you copies of the draft once they're done. And then once everything's finalized, you would just meet to sign and execute them.
Great. And then kind of following up with it, is that something that you should be revisiting every year, every so often?
I don't think so. And this is where practitioners really vary. I've seen some practitioners where they try to introduce a maintenance plan where they want people to come in every year and go over the documents. Right. I really don't feel like that's necessary. This should be something, a well-drafted will and estate plan should carry families through many different changes in their life. It should carry you through the birth or adoption of additional children. It's really something that I believe people should do when they have minor age children. They should revisit revising these documents or updating them, maybe once the children are older, perhaps in their, you know, mid to late 20s. And then possibly, you know, later on in life when people enter their, you know, 60s and 70s. It's not something that you need to do every year, certainly not.
Great. So if someone is, if they're interested in learning more about setting up an estate plan and contacting you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Sure. So I have a Facebook page. You can find me on Facebook. It's www.facebook.com/ Resnick Law. That will also lead you to my website. You can email me at orlyresnicklaw@gmail.com, or you can call me at 919-228-9733.
Great. And we'll link to all that in our show notes. All right, Orly, and that brings us to our final section of the show, the show and tell segment, where our guests will share a tip, a piece of advice with our listeners. So do you have a show and tell for us today?
Sure. So estate planning is a term that can often be off-putting for some people. They think, well, I don't have an estate. You have to have millions of dollars to have an estate. Everybody has an estate. An estate is just everything that you own. So you have an estate regardless of whether you have $100, $1,000, $100,000. And just another item that's really good to think about with estate planning is the process of estate planning in and of itself can just be a really good opportunity for couples to get a snapshot of their finances, to sit down together and really look at what they have, where it's held, how they've been saving, if they've been saving, to discuss the goals for their family, for their children, for themselves once their children are grown. Everyone leads such busy lives now, and it's easy for time to get away from us, and these are just things that we know in the back of our mind we should do, but we don't necessarily make the time to do them. So estate planning can be a really good opportunity to bring some of those issues to the forefront of a couple's discussion.
Yeah, that's also true. You know, I know listeners of the show spend so much time thinking about how they can best provide for their children, give them quality experiences, make sure they're happy, have skills to succeed later. But, you know, really thinking about these issues, thinking about how you would provide if, you know, something unforeseen were to happen to you is one of the best things that you can do for them. So thank you so much for coming on today, Orly, and talking about this really important topic.
Thank you for having me.
You can find links to what we talked about on our show page, discoverychilddevelopmentcenter.com/podcast. Visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/preschoolandbeyond. We look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks.